I'm hanging out with one of my good friends, Yvette Floss. I haven't seen her.
Yes, the boss lady herself.
Yes, yes. I like you, Msebenzi. I figure my boss.
I'm boss, yeah. You see, so tea. It's by default.
I haven't seen you in forever. I don't see everyone in forever.
Yeah, no. I mean, I do work crazy hours. Yeah. When I'm awake, everyone is still asleep. When I'm asleep, everyone starts their normal day. Yeah. But I mean, also just with everything that's going on in the world right now, crazy. We're on lockdown. Yeah. It's just a lot of preparation and just, you know, anxiety all over the place in terms of what are we going to do moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still working during the lockdown period. So obviously living alone, not being with my family, it's just going to be a tough time.
You're still working? Because, I mean, I thought essential services, like, are you in essential services, girl?
I mean, clearly my job is not essential at this point. Like, it's not essential. But we're still carrying on. We are going to be notified at work how we're going to be accessing the studio in terms of doing shows and stuff. But, yeah. It's still work as usual.
You say work. I know what you do, but like for someone else that's listening to this and they're not sure, who even floss to me?
Yo, mongazi poza angazi ogo to pete yini. Well, my name is Yvette Floss, the one and only boss. I host a show called Be Boss with Yvette Floss every single weekday between 3 and 5 in the morning.
Okay, great.
And that is why I get to like guys, Night Rider. So yeah.
Yeah, new contract season.
New contract season, once again, anxiety all over the place. Not too sure exactly what is going down again because of the Corizi. Yeah. Things are being delayed, things have been pushed back. So nothing has been signed as yet. A lot of uncertainty as to what is going to happen with the new radio year. Will it start on the 1st of April? Are they going to delay starting it? We have no idea what's going on right now.
I've been in your shoes, but like, my experiences weren't as like hectic as yours.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, the contract season came once because I think I was on radio for a period of about, well, commercial radio for a period of about plus minus 3 years.
Yeah, yeah.
When contract season came, you know what?
I won't lie. The past couple of months have been very difficult for me. I've literally, because I suffer from anxiety, I've had to tell people, listen, if you're gonna talk to me, if you're gonna text me on something where you're checking up on me because you actually care. Not because you're checking up on me as a way to divert the fact that you wanna find out, did I get a contract? Have I heard what's happening? There's been so many speculations happening around the office at this point that I have literally been avoiding work. I only go to work when I'm going to do my show.
That's for your mental
health. It's for my mental health. I suffer from terrible anxiety.
Really?
And just gossip in general can get the best of me. You know, I had a night where I sat up crying for hours over something that a colleague had said, and it was just gossip. And because I'm so anxious, I overthink everything. I took it to heart and I took it as something that was serious, and it was just gossip. And from then I was just like, you know what? I'm blocking out anything that's got to do with lineup. If you're coming at me, come at me with something else. Let's talk about the world and the starving children. Do not tell me about lineup at YFM. I don't want to hear it. Oh my God, it's been so stressful.
Okay, I think I've said, I've never experienced what anxiety feels like.
Yeah.
And I mean, sure, like any other person, I've had worry here and there, but for you to say, to classify it specifically as anxiety,
yeah,
what does anxiety feel like? Like, from a physical perspective, what does it feel like? And from a mental perspective, just draw me a picture of when you are feeling anxious. What is that like?
You know, I'm a very petty person.
I'm
petty as hell.
Yvette!
Yo, but you know what? I would never wish anxiety on even my worst enemy. It is the most horrible thing in the world. It's constant worrying, constant overthinking. Your mind doesn't want to switch off. You can't be rational with stuff. Like, for example, simple things like getting in the morning. I mean, you can see how many sneakers I have. just choosing a pair of shoes is like anxiety. I'm thinking about a lot of things. Will it rain today? Will I step in water? Who will I see? Didn't I wear these last week? Didn't I take pictures and post on Insta of these shoes? Are they gonna say I've been wearing these same shoes over and over again? It is just constant overthinking everything from waking up in the morning to putting on your clothes to going outside to just going to buy a loaf of bread. You sit there, there's no bread in the house, but you're so anxious about going outside because you're thinking, could I get knocked over by a car? What if someone takes me when I go outside? You know, just you just think about 10,000 things that a normal person could say, come on, dude, really? Why are you doing this? Relax. But it's literally your brain constantly playing tricks on you all the time. You become a child almost when you have anxiety. You need someone to constantly reassure you, it's okay, don't worry. You know, a lot of contact helps a lot, you know, hugging, just rubbing your back. It transforms you into umtwana, basically, anxiety.
I've never known
it is the
this.
Most terrible thing. I've had anxiety attacks. I've suffered from depression where I lost insane amounts of weight. I mean, people were asking me for the longest time, and this is the first time I've actually spoken openly about this. I lost around 25 kilograms. I lost a lot of weight in 2015. Towards 2015, beginning of 2016.
Yeah.
And that's because I was just going through a very depressive period with my career. And I lost my job over something that I didn't really understand.
Yeah.
And from there, it was just
downhill
completely. I mean, I've always been a normal person, very bubbly, kapapa, I mean, a very outgoing. And 2015 was when things started changing for me, when I started feeling different, constantly sad, not able to explain why am I sad. Someone will ask me what's wrong and I wouldn't be able to explain. Actually, what is wrong? When I'm asking myself, what is wrong? I don't know, but I just don't feel okay. So I lost a lot of weight. I mean, I did go to the doctor and the doctor gave me tablets, but then referred me to a psychologist. I went to psychology for about 4 months. Eventually that wasn't working for me because I just felt like, my nigga, you're getting paid for this. Do you really care? Like, do you really, really, really care? Because I struggle to talk to and open up to people that I don't know. So it didn't work much for me. But I mean, acceptance is the first thing. Understanding what's wrong with you and then just working from there.
I want to go back a bit. When you spoke about the fact that anxiety for you was in like the smallest of things, Ubuti, you couldn't choose a pair of sneakers or, for example, going out the house and worrying, Ubuti, do I look fine?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Are you able to draw a line between not being sure of yourself and being anxious? Or is that just like in one thing? Because I've also struggled with like, and sometimes I do struggle with it. I'm at home, you know, I'm getting ready to go wherever.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm fine. But as soon as I step out into the public, I'm just like, why did I wear these shoes? You know, why did I wear this? Why did I do this like this?
Yeah.
Is there a line,
yeah,
like a definitive line between,
yeah,
being unsure of yourself? And if there is, I don't know what that is described as, but is there a line between being unsure of yourself and being anxious? Or,
yeah, because the thing with anxiety is that it's constant overthinking of everything. Even the most basic of things, like the most basic, you will think about it for hours on end, and it's like, but this is a normal thing. Like, for example, I can't go grocery shopping. I can't go grocery shopping. I can't order food. I cannot. Do not ask me what do you want to eat.
Why can't you do that, though?
Because I will sit there and I will walk. There has been a time where I spent a good 2.5 hours walking around Pick and Pay, to the point where I started noticing the security guard was now following me because this guy is like, Sisi, you've been here. I went to the store to go and buy dinner. There was nothing to eat, so I had to go and buy dinner. In my mind, when I left, I thought, you know what, I'll make spaghetti bolognese.
Yeah.
But as soon as I get to the store, I see 10,000 things. And then I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to make? What if he doesn't like this? Or it's just not being able to make decisions there and then like a normal person would be able to. Just constantly overthinking, not being able to fall asleep normally. Like, normal people go to bed, put their heads down, and they sleep. When you have anxiety, you will think about 1,000 things that happened today, 1,000 things about tomorrow as well. Mm. Just constantly, literally, Apple, in everything you do, you will overthink it. Every single thing. Every single thing, without a doubt.
This is so scary. I've felt anxious in moments and in experiences, but never like constantly. And like, I wouldn't constantly know how to cope with
it. And I mean, it's been the worst for me, especially over the past year. You know, you're going to bed at night, you lie in bed and you think about 1,000 things. Where sometimes I do catch myself thinking, and then even I'm like, okay, but dog, come on, really? sometimes I won't lie and girls cruiser in certain things. You know, you see a text or a comment and you overthink stuff, you know. Certain apps I can't even use, like Twitter. The only reason why I have Twitter, to be honest, is because of my job.
Yeah.
If I worked a regular job, like I was a lawyer or a doctor, or I had an office job or something, I would not have Twitter, because that app gives me anxiety on behalf of other people. Like, sometimes I wish I could stand up for someone, but then I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna get attacked. I don't post pictures of myself or my boyfriend, or sometimes there are things that are happening around me and I wanna tweet about it, but I'm like, oh my God, Sabagabilia app, just thinking about it gives me anxiety, so I stay completely away from it.
So 2015/16, you undergo just like a major slump in your life, and I think most of us at some point have. But for you, it was a lot to do with like your mental health. And obviously, as Black people, how we approach mental health is very different to how Abelu approach the issue of mental health, because you're gonna tell your mother, Uguti, listen, I'm not fine. Umawako atigwe. Snap out of it, you just be moody, things like that. How did you have to, just from the time, the time of your diagnosis, and from just the time that you discovered, Uguti, just something is not right, how did you have the conversation with your parents? Because I know you're very open with your parents, pretty close with your parents. But how did that conversation go? What did they say? What was the mood like?
I mean, it's been quite a journey, I won't lie, but more than anything, I'm so proud of my parents.
Aww.
I mean, my parents are extremely Zulu, abasemakhaya, you know. Next year, even, they're done with Joburg, they've retired and everything, they're going to stay in KZN permanently, and mangitemakhaya ngisho emzimkhulu, where we still go and get water from the river type of vibes. So, I mean, growing up even, there would be times where I even remember my dad would say, okay, you're saying you're stressed. What is stress in isiZulu? There's no word for stress in isiZulu. You know, that's how he would say it jokingly, but he meant it, what he was saying. Like, things like depression and stress, like, as soon as ayikho leyo nto ngesintu, my parents don't take it. They don't accept it. They don't understand it. So it was quite a process for them to understand that, listen, I have depression. Because in the beginning, it was a thing where Uma would say, you know what, or things like that. But in the end, as time progressed, and my dad as well, they started seeing that this is actually a real thing, because I would start having panic attacks and anxiety attacks. Basically, anxiety attacks vary from person to person.
Yeah.
But with my anxiety attacks, it's so strange because I get nosebleeds as well.
So,
like, my chest will start, I'll start like breathing heavily, like I can feel an anxiety attack coming. It'll start with your heart like sort of racing, then you almost can't breathe. It's almost like an asthma attack, but just an asthma attack when some, and you're screaming, like you're just screaming, like, oh my God, I can't breathe, make it stop. And then, you know, you end up not being able to speak, you're panting, and then now it's the nose bleeding, and now you're passing out and things like that. So from there, it's when my mom and dad started realizing, once I started getting anxiety attacks, that this thing is not getting any better.
Yeah.
It is depression, it is anxiety. And being on medication, you know, I went on all different types of medication. I even got to a point where I was taking Prozac. For me was the worst, because my hair was falling out. So if you have a look at some of my photos from like 2016, beginning 2017, you'll see I was wearing a lot of hats, a lot of bandanas, a lot of sporties, because my hair was literally in blotches. And I was in denial. Like, I wasn't accepting the fact that, my nigga, your hair's falling out. I'm like, no, listen, I'm fine. I'm not sick, to the point where I left Prozac, because now I was becoming a zombie. I'm constantly moody. I don't want to talk to people.
On drugs.
Yeah, you know, my relationship is just sour.
And
I'm
when I
always
say drugs,
sour.
I mean the medication, just in case somebody.
Yeah, not the super mega drugs. So yeah, it was just a very difficult time. But then my parents accepted, like I said in the beginning when we started, acceptance is key. You need to accept the situation,
yeah.
And you need to work on how you're gonna move forward from that. So when I stopped taking medication, things didn't get better for me in any way. Trust me, I wasn't feeling better. The only thing is that my hair wasn't falling out anymore, but I was still feeling pretty horrible as a human being,
yeah.
And then I started smoking weed more often,
okay.
Than usual. Weed was something that, you know, I had tried here and there.
Natural herbs.
You know, in varsity,
yeah.
You know, when I saw my vits days. Yeah, my vits days and stuff like that. But it wasn't something ebengikuyo njalo. And so obviously I was doing quite a lot of reading, and then I bumped into how cannabis helps with, you know, mental health and depression. And so I tried it out, and from there it just started making me feel so much better as a human being, to the point where I cannot go a day without smoking for my mental health. I cannot not. So till this day, right now, there's a weed tray and a crusher and everything and a scale and all the things going on. Like, it's a thing. But now my biggest worry was, because I'm from such a traditional home, more traditional than Christian even,
yeah.
How am I gonna deal with this with my parents? Because now I had moved back home, because being alone was not an option. I just wasn't coping. So it got to a point where I sat my parents down. And the weirdest thing is that my mother listens to everything my boyfriend says. Somehow my boyfriend has a thing. He could tell my mom, he could tell my mom anything and she'll believe him. So I had the conversation with him first, and I told him that I might need you to ease my mom and help me ease her into this thing, yentango, because it's not gonna be, she's not gonna take kindly to it, because my mom, nobody in my family smokes, nobody drinks, not even cigarettes, there's no alcohol at all.
And lo and behold, here comes his child. Now you want.
Yeah, my dad only has like red wines because he's diabetic, so it's part of his diet. But otherwise, in general, agna chwana giti, agna tango, agna kwai next. So here comes the black sheep vele of the family who's gonna come with weed. So when we started chatting to my mom about it, my boyfriend had said that, you know, it's something that you drink with tea, you know, just boil it and put it in boiling water and drink it. It's gonna calm her down, all of those things. My mom was very finicky about it, like, oh my God, you're gonna get high and stuff like that. But then after that, she was okay with it. But then now I don't drink weed tea. It's not me, it's horrible. I prefer to smoke. So now it gets to a point where now I need to smoke this weed, but I can't come out to my mom, I'm scared. And then I'm also like, but my mom has always been supportive in every single thing that I've done. There's never been a time where my mom has judged me. You know, if anything, she's always encouraged me to tell her, because if I'm not telling her, who am I gonna tell?
Yeah, and what advice is that person giving you?
Exactly. So eventually it just got to a point where I told my mom, ukuthi ma, intsango ngiyayibhema, but not because ngiyaganga. Honestly, because it makes me feel better. In the beginning, she was really confused. Like, how is this possible? Like, why?
Why are you even saying this?
Yeah, like, what is happening? But eventually, she understood. And even to this day, my mom is very aware that I smoke weed. But because of respect, I don't do it at home.
Yeah.
Or I don't do it in front of her at all. If my mom comes over to visit, I always make it a point to hide the weed, hide everything away so she doesn't see. She knows that it happens, and my dad knows that it happens as well, but
she's
it's not something to do. Yeah, it's not something,
yeah,
that I'm gonna do in front of them or have it smell like weed when my mom comes around or anything like that. So they've been very understanding and so supportive, my parents. It's a blessing more than anything, I won't lie.
Love and mental health, or love and the issues that relate to mental health. Dating is super weird, you know, because it's always a process of finding what you like about someone and eventually finding what you don't like about someone.
Yeah.
And once you discover that one thing that you don't like about that person, you let them go. For me, that's what dating has been, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why I've been very finicky about the issue,
yeah,
of dating. So now, here you come. You are now having these problems that you are having, and this man says he wants to jollify you. You know how?
Yeah.
How obviously you say that he has had the conversation with your mother, but how have you had the conversation with him? And how has like your issues or your struggles,
yeah,
with anxiety? How has that affected your relationship?
You know, Uschaba, first of all, I don't even know how to describe him in English. He is such a superhuman being. I would never date me. I would not put up with me. I cannot put up with someone like me. You are just never sure how this person is going to be doing today. He is never sure what is wrong. He is never sure if I'm going to be happy today. And you know, when I'm happy, I'm super happy. But when I'm sad, I'm super sad. So it weighs down on him a lot as well. And the crazy thing is, when I was diagnosed with anxiety and depression, we had already been in a relationship for 2 years at the time. And it was a 2-year relationship prior to a breakup. So we had been together for about a year. We broke up and then we had just gotten back together. That was about a year and a half, 2 years in when I was diagnosed. So he knows fully who I am. He knows who I am. He knows what I was like, how bubbly I was, how outgoing I was, how I was always just ready. I loved being outside. Growing up as a child, even like my varsity days, I was globetrotter, constantly wanting to explore and go see and try out. But now I am forever inside. So he understood a lot about what was going on in terms of the changes, because he knew who I was.
Yeah.
But now it's dealing with someone who has depression. We are jola nae. You don't know how to behave around them. You don't know what to say around them. You don't know how to encourage them. You don't know how to uplift them. You're not sure. I just commend him. I don't know how he does it. Now, mind you, I would lie. Almost 5 years later, I still ask myself, but my, what are you doing here? You're like, you know, you don't have to do this, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is, it's not a force. But somehow he still manages to love me throughout the, and he will probably tell you at some point, if we had a rand for every time I've had a panic attack in public and he has saved me, would have quite a bit of money by now. There was even a time when I had a panic attack at the North taxi rank. Imagine, during peak hour traffic, it is packed in town. I'm having a panic attack in the middle of the road on Twist Street, and I say MTN. This guy literally put me on his back.
Aww.
People are thinking that perhaps he's trying to steal me or like, you know, it was a scene, but somehow he just keeps on keeping, he just keeps on keeping on, like through and through and through. And you know, he does little things to try and encourage me. Like, he'll leave sticky notes around the house,
aww,
like in the bathroom. You know, he'll leave a sticky note, remember you are great, you know, have a good show. He'll send me texts while I'm doing my show, you sound amazing. He'll say to you, you are boss, you know that you're the boss. And just encourage me in little, in small ways, you know, write me letters and just, he's an amazing guy, man. But honestly, being in a relationship with someone who has depression takes a certain type of human being.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a begazela. You have to be patient. You have to be very patient and understanding, because half of the time there's nothing wrong around me, but I am just sad.
It's just the person that you
are. I'm just sad. I've just become that person where I'm quiet. You know, when I jump on air, I am a ball of energy.
Yeah.
But as soon as that mic goes off, you know, you're back into your thoughts.
I
thinking
know that.
Constantly overthinking all the time.
I know that. And
yeah,
for me, maybe, and this is not even to take away from your story, but for me, doing radio was 3 hours or 4 hours or however long the show is. That was that time where you gave it. So I gave the person who was listening on the other side my all. Like, Yazini, I'd be, yay, I want to hang out with this girl. She's so cool. She's so what, what. But as soon as I go home, I'm just like, yo, I'm tired. And I feel like I've given so much of myself to other people. And I don't have anything left for me.
Absolutely.
And for me, during radio days, I wasn't seeing anyone. So there wasn't, for me, I had to be my own support system. And I had to be, you know what I mean? So it was just like, I'm just constantly tired. And I've given and given and given and given. And I, obviously, okay, well, not obviously, but I've had my fair share. I have my fair share of mental health issues.
Yeah.
But they weren't as intense. They aren't as intense as yours.
Yeah.
Getting off air after a show, you know, while as a person who is struggling with anxiety, you're now getting off air, you've given all that you can to the listener. What is that feeling like?
It's just exhaustion, really, because you know that everything that you've said or you've done, you've done to benefit the listener. When I go on air, I forget about myself. I take everything about myself and I put it on the side and I'm like, you know what? I'm doing this for the Yvette Floss sitting at home who's got depression, who's relying on me to uplift her mood this morning. Apple probably has insomnia. She cannot sleep. The last thing I need to do right now is jump on air and speak about how depressing everything is. I need to take everything, ehlupamina, put it in a little box, put it to the side. I will see it at 5 a.m. For now, my focus is you, making your day better, encouraging you to do better. And of course, even working at that time of the morning, everyone who's up at that time is either studying, working a security shift or the call centers, working jobs that require a lot of energy,
where
you and you find yourself feeling demotivated. So even though I'm constantly depressed, I make it my effort or my job to encourage people at that time that are listening. But as soon as the mic goes off, it's back to my reality.
But does that not make you then feel like you have to have a split? Like, I think it's a bit crazy because you have to be two people.
Yes, you definitely have to be two people.
You know what I mean? Like,
you have to be two people.
And when you're on air, it's, yo, hey, in ganjan, ganjani. But when you're off air, it's just, it's mellow and it's lonely in the studio. And
yeah.
It's quiet. And I'm just, I'm baffled at how you've managed to cope with it.
Yeah.
Because I think if I was in your shoes, I would have died if it.
Oh, my baby. Strong. Suicide is something that I've contemplated 1,000 times over. I mean, I tried to commit suicide in 2017 in my boyfriend's bathroom in Parktown. I had just downed a cocktail of whatever I had found under the sink. I didn't even know what it was. Listen, I have had it. I cannot do this anymore. This is not what I signed up for. I'm done. Like, there's no fixing me. I'm a broken human being. And even if I go, really, who really needs me, honestly? Very selfish thoughts that I was having at the time. So I downed whatever I downed. But luckily, I think Chava was literally 2 minutes away from coming into the apartment because I had been contemplating doing this the whole day. I had literally poured this concoction. You know, Billie Eilish's video, it's almost like she was there on the day when I was trying to kill myself.
Yeah.
I poured this thing, like a jug, because there was a little 1 liter sachet of milk, took it out, threw it to the side, poured this thing into the jug, and I sat there at the table looking at it, thinking, wondering for hours, just wondering, calculating, you know, thinking about my parents, are they, how, you know, and then I did it.
Sure. So this is how we wrap up the first part of the conversation regarding anxiety, mental health, and being gaslit. In the second part of this conversation, we are going to continue the story of what happened on the day when Yvette contemplated taking her life. You're so selfish. I wouldn't have had a friend like you. I'm so mad at you.